glad that you're here with us. We're going to start in on a study that I think is very interesting, and I hope you will as well. And this will be a continuing thing each day as we look at the theme that we find through the Bible that I've just kind of entitled Chaos to Creation. And I think that'll become clear as we get on through our discussion today. But as we begin, I want us to start really at the beginning, at least for us, and that's the creation account that we find in Genesis chapter 1, beginning. Now, I don't know if you've ever asked yourself this question of why did God choose to include that account? Now, on the surface, there's a very easy answer for that, and I don't want to dismiss that. But yet I want us to look and see that it may be a little bit more involved than we might initially think. Because if you'll recall, who was this creation account first written for? Well, it was written for the children of Israel. And if you'll recall, it was written as they were about to go into the land of Canaan. So here is Moses, and God directs him through the inspiration of the Spirit that he needs to provide Israel with this account of the creation, because they're about to go into an area where they're going to have all kinds of different creation accounts before them. There are going to be accounts of gods that created this and other gods that created that. And so there's going to be all of this competition of different themes. But the interesting thing is, some of those themes would get awfully close to the truth, but not quite. And so God says to Moses, what I want you to do is to write down for the children of Israel the truth of the matter, so that as they go in, there's not going to be this confusion that they might have with all of these other accounts going in. Now, the second, it's an introduction to God. The way the creation account begins is with a knowledge of God already. So if you were an Israelite, you already knew who he was. And so there's not a lot of time spent elaborating on, okay, let me introduce you to God, let me tell you who he is, let me tell you about all of his characteristics. To a large extent, the children of Israel knew a great deal of that, yet it does introduce us to God in that role of the Creator. All right, and so we would then add with that, that here is God who is given on a somewhat different level than maybe they had thought about him, or at least had fully thought about him, as now Moses says, you are our Creator God. And what God allows to happen at this point is the introduction of the theme of Creator that's going to permeate the Bible. We don't leave that theme behind for the rest of the Bible account. And so we can think about just a couple of examples here. If you look to the book of Psalms, you're going to find all of these different psalms that are talking about God as Creator. These are a few examples you might want to go back and look at. Of course, Psalm 148 is very familiar to us because someone put that to music, and we sing that song quite often about God serving in that role as Creator. So here we've got, at the very outset of the Bible, God saying, this is who I am, this is how you came to be, no matter what you hear in the land of Canaan, no matter what you hear of all of these other gods, I am the Creator God. And I want you to pay attention to that with all of these other things that are unfolding. So with that in mind, let's go to the creation account. And as we look at the very introduction of the creation, as we think about our coming to be, God starts it off in a very unusual way. And if you're like me, it may be that for a long time you kind of read over this part of the creation account. You look at this, but maybe it doesn't register. At least that's the way it was for me for a very long time. But I think it's very important that we get verse 2 down. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's what verse 1 tells us. He says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. Why does God tell us that? That's a strange statement. Because here we think about God creating, bringing something out of nothing, and that's absolutely right. But yet, he says, before I started in on the earth, there was something there already. Now that leads to some very wide speculation, doesn't it? And if you want to get into some serious speculating, Google it. And you're going to find all kinds of wild and strange stories about what went on ahead of time. Here's the thing, God said nothing about why he did it this way. He didn't say, well, you know, maybe there was this one time and I destroyed it, and this is what was left, and out of that I created the earth. That's one of those Google stories. Or maybe I started with step one and then step two. He gives no explanation for it. But I think that this verse is essential for understanding the Bible. Let's look at our terms. He first of all says that the earth was without form. You know what another word for that is? Chaotic. So here, as everything is beginning to take shape, God says, before I brought the earth as you know it into being, chaos ruled. There was nothing there that was in order at all. And he also says that the earth was void. And I believe what he means by that is void of life. That there was nothing living in all of this. Here was just matter, nothing that had any breath of life within it. And then he adds a third term when he says that there was darkness on the face of the earth. Now that's an easy term to figure out. Simply, there was no light. Okay, so what kind of situation did we have? Chaos, lifelessness, darkness. Does that sound like anywhere you would like to be? And I think that's kind of the point God's making here. But then we find, after this, God introduces himself. And he says, as this verse continues, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. So here we know water was there at this point, and it says God hovers over it, which is an interesting term in and of itself. It's the same word that we would use for a bird sitting on its nest. Some of you who grew up on a farm, you might talk about a hen brooding over her eggs, or a robin maybe brooding over its nest. That's the word that's used here. And there are going to be two occasions in the Old Testament where that word is applied to God. The other is going to be in Deuteronomy chapter 32, where as Moses is describing God, he says he was like an eagle that stirs up its nest, that flutters over its young, spreading out its wings, catching them, bearing them on its pinions. So here is God, who's pictured kind of as this mother bird. And this mother bird sitting on the nest, and it's like the nest is there and life is hatching. And so we would say, in a very metaphorical sense here, that God is hatching life out of all of this chaos. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, but the earth was without form, and it was void, and it was lifeless and darkness. Yet God looked at this, and he brooded over the waters. And then we have God's first statement that he makes on record. And as he interjects himself into this, he says, "Let there be light." Now, with that introduction, what God is doing is he's putting himself in the midst of this void. So here, what was lifeless and what was void and what was dark, God says, I am now going to play a role in this. And he says, the first thing I'm going to do is to get light on this subject. And so he speaks the word and light comes in, and what happens now is what is without form is going to begin to take shape. Light now is a picture of God. And so here in the midst of all of this darkness, in the midst of all of this void and lifelessness, God reflects himself into the creation. And we could take that a step further as we now say we have a new theme that comes into the Bible. Beginning right there in the first verses of Genesis, when God says, "Let there be light," now he is going to, throughout the entire Bible, be associated with light. Light represents him. Light represents the things associated with him. Let's take just a little bit of time and look at some examples of that. We're not going to spend a long time. But I love this in Isaiah chapter 60. As Isaiah is talking about things we'll read about later in the Bible, he says, "The sun shall be no more your light by day, nor for brightness shall the moon give you light, but the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your God will be your glory. Your sun shall no more go down, nor your moon withdraw itself, for the Lord will be an everlasting light, and your days of mourning shall be ended." Isn't that a beautiful picture? We're going to get to this, Lord willing, on Wednesday as the prophets tell us a whole lot about this chaos to creation. But here's kind of a sampling of that. When Isaiah says, God is all the light you need. Well, let's look to the near the end of the Bible. As we look to 1 John chapter 1, this is the message we have heard from him and proclaimed to you, that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. Finally, Revelation 21, very near the end of the Bible, "And the city has no need for the sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and its lamp is the Lamb." Now, what do we find at the first part of the Bible? God says, "Let there be light." What do we find at the end of the Bible? God says, "There's not going to be any need for a sun or moon because I'll be there and I'm light." And all in between, what we have is God identifying himself as the one who's going to shine in the darkness, the one who's going to bring light to troubled times. Isn't that amazing? And so here in these opening verses of Genesis, God says, "I am bringing myself into this creation. I am bringing light where there is darkness so that I can turn what is void into form." And we'll see that as we continue on through. All right, so we have the days of creation. Someone suggested, I don't know that it's a bad thought, that you can divide it up. The first 3 days is formlessness changing to form. The second 3 days is void being filled with life. If nothing else, that's a pretty good way to remember it in general, isn't it? That in those first days you've got God separating the light from the dark, separating the water from the land, separating, giving, putting the firmament there, giving it some kind of order, some kind of form, and then beginning to populate it, bringing the fish and bringing the animals and bringing the birds and ultimately bringing humans into this world that he is currently creating. But here's the thing I want us to see in this. All of that up until the creation of man was done for man. So as God brings order out of this chaos, life from the lifelessness, what we're finding is that everything is being set up for man's creation. Why? Because man is the apex of the creation. I'll have to disagree with some of our ill-informed friends in the environmental movement that say you and I are no better than the pet dog or the pet cat or whatever. Oh yes, we are. And it's because God said we are. And thus, as God brings everything into order, turning all of this chaos into order, what he's saying is I'm creating a world that's going to be fit for one who's going to be like me. So what do we find then? As the creation account continues, we are the only ones whose creation is described in any detail. The other simply says, God made the fish, God made the birds, God made the animals. And it's almost as if God speaks and there they are. But when he gets to mankind, he slows it down. And he says, I want to give you step by step of how you came into existence. And you'll recall what he says. He says, I took you from the dust of the ground, from the dust I created man. I would suggest to you that's a major part of our theme this week. That as we look at the creation of man, it's simulating the creation of the earth. So here's the dust. Here's the chaos, so to speak. And God forms this man out of the dust, but yet this shell is lifeless, isn't it? Doesn't have any life within it. So what does God do? God interjects Himself into this lifeless creation. And so what happens here, we see life coming from that lifelessness. And we remember, as God is creating man, He forms his body from the dust, and then God says to us, and I interjected some of myself into you. You see how this is simulating the creation? Here was lifelessness and void. God says, let there be light. Brings himself into the creation. Here is man. He's dust. He's formed, but still no life. And what does God say? I breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature. So what was chaotic and void and lifeless now springs to life. Why? Because God is a part of it. Because God is the one who's helping to bring that about. And oh, by the way, here's another biblical theme introduced. Because every time we see spirit and life, they're going to be together in a lot of these places. Again, look at a sampling of that. As we think about Job 33, Job says, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? We also think about John 6. It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh is no help at all. The words that I have spoken to you are spirit and life. 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 6, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. Romans 8, for to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. And then Romans chapter 8, verse 11, if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ Jesus from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwell in you. Are you seeing the importance of the first two chapters of Genesis? Look at all of the biblical themes that we're seeing introduced. Creation from chaos. Life from lifelessness. Light in the midst of darkness. Spirit giving life. And what we see in these first two chapters will be a continuing picture as we find mankind continuing along the way. Now this morning, I have not thus far told you anything you don't know. We're dealing with things that probably many of you have known since you were, probably as long as you can remember. So I want to come back to the question again. Why are we told these things? These things that are very familiar to us, these things that we have studied about all of these years. Why are we being told these things? Well, a whole lot of it is to give us a scope of what mankind is like in his relationship with God. And let me turn that around, and in God's relationship with mankind. We oftentimes hear about the evolution of man, don't we? That's the wrong term. If the Bible teaches us anything, we need to be talking about the devolution of man. Man was created perfect. Everything about him was perfect. God had created him physically. I assume Adam was a very fit individual. But more important than that, he was created pure and clean and wholesome and right with God, and he walked with God. So as we think about mankind, what God intended was to make something good out of nothing. When God created us from the dust of the ground, he was saying, this is good. This is something that it ought to be this way. But yet, what's gone on in our history? Well, what we've seen is that man has gone from that, of what he once was, devolved into what is formless and void and dark. And let me tell you, I'm not going to do like some of our religious friends and lay all of this at Adam's doorstep and say the only reason we're bad is because Adam sinned. That is not what God teaches. In fact, we're going to see that here in just a minute. But let me show you some examples of how we see this in the Bible. When we think about that idea of formlessness, Remember what he says of God's people, his people, when they decide to go off into sin? He says, you are not my people. What's he saying? He's saying, I created you good. I created you whole. And look what you've done. You've reversed that. You've devolved, going from something that I formed to now something that is formless. What about that idea of void? What do we find in the New Testament? You are dead in sins and trespasses. When you chose to leave God's purpose for you and go into this, you have devolved into something that is without form. And then certainly we find the darkness, that men love darkness rather than light. Okay, with all that in mind, here in the last part of our time this morning, let's introduce our theme for the week. And that's God pulling the creation back out of the chaos. Of God simulating over and over and over what He did in the first few verses of Genesis of making something out of nothing. So, here's our case study. We know that God created Adam very good. We established that fact. And we also learn that God took Adam and He put him in the Garden of Eden. So He creates him, He forms him, and then puts him into paradise. Here we go, from chaos to creation. Yet we know what happened, don't we? We know that Adam and Eve chose to sin, chose to devolve back into those ways of formlessness and void and darkness. And so what God put in the garden, God sent out of the garden. God said, you will not have this association with me. And in fact, it may very well have been so that Adam and Eve could live. Here was the tree of life. They had no access to it. They deserved death. And so it's kind of like God saying, you better get out of here, because what I need to do is to strike you down. But what do we have? We have creation reversing itself. What was created good going into chaos. And what we find for the next several generations is that's going to happen. Let's look and see what God says here in Genesis 3. He says, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Pretty emphatic, isn't it? You're the reason for this. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. And you shall eat the plants of the field by the sweat of your face. You shall eat bread till you return to the ground out of which you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. See that? Create chaos to creation. What's sin doing now? It's reversing. It's sending creation back into chaos. God brought life out of the dust. God now says life's going to go back into it. That's what sin does. That's what's leaving that perfect place with God is going to do to mankind. And so what do we then find? We find that all of Adam's children are going to uphold that same tradition. It's not that they inherited the sin of their fathers. It's the fact that they sinned like their father did. Every one of them made the choice to leave what was good and right and wholesome and to go back into the ways of sin, back into the ways of wickedness. And so this then is going to present a problem, isn't it? When we come over to Genesis chapter 6, this shows us how much they had devolved. God tells us the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continued. Let me pause here for just a minute. Sometimes we think we live in a bad society. Sometimes we're very discouraged and depressed when we see all this wickedness. Let me ask you something. Do you think it was anything like that? God says every person on earth, we'll see the exception here in a minute, every person on earth got up in the morning trying to figure out what he could do to go against God. What had been created has devolved. And God's not going to put up with it. God says, I created you for a much higher purpose than this. I didn't create you to have this kind of heart that's plunged back into darkness. I've not created you to be one who doesn't respect the life that I gave. I've not created you to return to this formlessness out of which I brought you. And so as all of these things are going on, God says, okay, if that's what you want to be, then that's what you're going to be. That's where I'm going to take you. And so after this degrading into formlessness and void, the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. That's one of the saddest verses in the Bible, isn't it? Here God had created the perfect world, the perfect creation, a man who came into being with life and righteous, who by his own choice could choose to obey God. That was perfect. But what did man do? He took what was perfect and made it imperfect. So God says, no, I'm not going to tolerate this. I'm not going to allow this creation to continue in the way that it's going. And so what does he do? He sends a great flood at this point. But I want you to think about this. What he's doing in sending this great flood is reversing what we found in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. What did God do almost from the beginning? It says that he separated the land from the waters. What does God do in the great flood? The land and the waters rejoined. It's returned to chaos, is what it is. Here in Genesis 1 and verse 2, we saw that the Spirit was hovering on the waters, brooding, hatching, bringing life. And now God says, after separating the land and the waters, I'm going to bring them back together again. Here is the return, the anti-creation, so to speak. What else? Well, we read during that week of creation that God brought life, that he brought birds of the air, animals into creation. With very few exceptions, the animal world is destroyed. All of these magnificent, marvelous things, which I think very much are indicative of God's imagination. You look at all the different kinds of birds and animals and beasts, and God says, I'm going to wipe them all out again. Just as I brought them in, now I'm going to take them out. But then we get to the worst part, don't we? What about these people into which God had interjected himself? Into which God had breathed the breath of life into them? Now he says, they're going to be destroyed also. I don't know how long it took to build the ark. Some speculate about 100 years. I think there's some relevance to that. But here were people who perhaps had one century to change their wicked ways. But they didn't. They had devolved to such a point that as they looked at this oddball Noah building the ark, they never thought, maybe I need to be listening to what he has to say. And so by the time God is done, what we see is all of that grand work of creation brought to naught. Land and seas rejoined. The animal world that brought life into the void taken away. And the one made in the very image of God now destroyed. But we do know there was an exception to that, don't we? That there was one who was willing to be what God desired for him to be. And so what we find in this then is that God is ready to recreate. He's destroyed the earth. He's let the water be on it. It's kind of like he's washed away all of these things that were so rotten. And now he says, let me get back to what I'm good at. Let me get back to showing you exactly what God can do. And so here, as Noah and his family come out into this world, here is the new creation the recreation that God has brought from the chaotic waters of the flood. Can you imagine what that would have been like as people were trying to reach the highest points on land, trying to stay away from death, yet the chaos came by the hand of God. But now God says, I'm ready to start over. And so interestingly enough, as he recreates, what we find is a prophecy that was made before the flood. To a man by the name of Lamech, God records for us, he fathered a son and called his name Noah, name meaning rest, saying, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us relief from our work and from the painful toil of our hands. Oftentimes when I get to thinking I really, really understand the book of Genesis, I start reading all these cryptic little verses that are included. I can't tell you everything that's being told to Lamech here, but I can tell you this. God is saying, bad times are coming, but I've got it under control. There's one who is going to provide a better way than what's going on right now. And so this faithful man, Noah, builds the ark, brings his family in, obeys the Lord in bringing the animals in as well. And what we find then is Noah becomes our second Adam of the Bible. By the way, there's a whole bunch of Adams in the Bible. So here is the man who is given the responsibility of being, if we want to put it in American presidential terms, here is the first man, the first gentleman of the earth. Here is the one who is to set the stage for everybody else. You ever notice the similarities between Adam and Noah? Both of them were given assignment over the animal world. What was Adam supposed to do? God says, bring all the animals in and you name them. I think that was an indication to show you're their master. You're the one who's in charge of them. What was Noah given the assignment to do? You bring all of these animals onto the ark. You bring them all in there with you. You're in charge of them. You're to make sure that this life that's in this recreated earth is going to be given what it's supposed to have. Here's the second thing. What was Noah commanded to do? You and your sons, you go out and you repopulate the earth. You see, this earth was created for life. This earth was created to have people who were made in my image within it. And you are responsible for making sure that takes place. So here now is the second Adam. As he's looking out over the creation, as he's seeing all of the things here that God has given to him, and God now has said, I am ready to return this life to what it needs to be. And then God said, I promise that I will never again destroy this world with water. Never again will I bring this kind of catastrophe upon the earth with water. Notice verse 9, or verse 11 of chapter 9, especially the first part of it, as he speaks to Noah and he says, I make this covenant with you. I promise you, Noah, never again is this going to happen. But here's a point I want you to see in this. The recreation, in its fullest sense, is still very much in the future. And that's what we're working toward this week. When we get to Friday, Lord willing, we're going to see how that all of these little road signs along the way are going to make a great deal of sense when we get to the ultimate time when God recreates and gives us an Adam who will do everything that's needed for us. All right. So as we draw to our final minutes here of class, let me make a couple of points for us to remember here with all of this. As we think about the lessons that we need to learn from this time period in our history, I want us to understand that the concept of creation and recreation is a Bible-wide theme. if you'll get yourself in that mindset when you start reading the Bible, I think you're going to be amazed. It's kind of like this. You know, you'll spend time searching for a car, and finally you find the car that's just perfect for you, and you buy it, and you get it out on the road. What do you then begin to notice? All of the other cars just exactly like the one you bought. A lot of times that's how this is in the Bible. When you get a theme in mind, suddenly all of these doors start springing open and you start seeing things that you've never seen before. Look for the creation, recreation theme. Look for the light theme. Look for the life and spirit theme. All of these things that God opens up within the first pages of the book of Genesis, those are going to be things we will see continuing to the book of Revelation in people, example, all kinds of different ways. So, pay particular attention to that. All right. Second thing. I want us to understand that God is an unstoppable force. Sometimes I'm afraid we get very discouraged when we see the darkness, as well we should in some senses. But if we are not awfully careful, we may allow ourselves to start thinking darkness has won the day. Darkness has won the battle. When we turn on the news and we see shooters in schools, when we see our government making all of these immoral decisions, when we see people who just simply have no respect for human life, that gets awfully depressing. Some people will say, well, I just stopped watching the news. Well, you know, that's kind of like whistling by the graveyard. You know, we're pretending it's not there, but it is. We can never allow ourselves to say, well, the darkness has won. Because the darkness never wins. God always lets there be light. And one day, that's going to be very, very obvious to everybody who's around that God can't be stopped. Again, let me suggest to you that within your look for this creation, recreation, always pay attention to the light passages. Listen to how God is saying light's never going to be squelched out by the darkness. It may look like that for a while, but nonetheless, make sure you understand God says, I'm going to win. Let me give you the one that we need to remember the most. And that's man's history of devolving. Why do we need to learn that? Because that's our danger. It's our danger. You know, when we came into this world, God brought us in perfect. He brought us in with a soul that's clean. We have the breath of life within us. It's up to us to keep that purity. And as we look at all of our ancestors along the way and we see all the mistakes they've made, we need to learn from that. And we need to make sure that we are not going into this devolving process within our lives. And certainly, we understand that, especially after becoming a Christian, that God is saying, you need to go forward. And you don't need to be like those who've loved the darkness rather than light. And so this week, we're going to continue that theme. And tomorrow, we're going to look at some folks who tried to defy God in these. And we'll see what happened. And then we'll see what He brings about within His people in the land of Egypt. Thank you for your good attention this morning. Appreciate you being here and appreciate you listening to this.